Hello and welcome. You're listening to The Broadband Exchange, the podcast from your friends at Telecompetitor. I'm Ian Desher, Pivot's Director of Media and Story and Managing Editor of Telecompetitor. It's time to review this week's broadband news. Let's get into it. We'll begin with wireless, where the industry spent another week debating how far SpaceX could take Starlink Mobile. Last week, we covered SpaceX's plan to combine a much larger direct-to-device satellite constellation with a terrestrial network and challenge the three largest U.S. wireless carriers. This week, analysts pushed back. They argued that satellites alone cannot provide the capacity needed in dense markets, building a nationwide ground network will take years, and an MVNO agreement with one of the big three could be difficult to obtain. Telecompetitor's Joan Ingebretson offered a partial rebuttal. "Those obstacles are real," Joan wrote, "but they don't necessarily settle the question. SpaceX had already said it plans to use both satellite and terrestrial infrastructure. A service that eliminates more dead zones and performs better during disasters could also be differentiated before it matched every feature or every tower of a national carrier. The debate, in other words, isn't whether SpaceX could recreate today's wireless networks overnight. It's whether the company can build a credible new kind of competitor over time." The FCC, meanwhile, opened another possible path for direct-to-device service by considering the use of unlicensed spectrum. The commission launched a proceeding on whether Part 15 devices could communicate directly with satellites in three bands, 902 to 928 MHz, 2.4 GHz, and 5.725 to 5.85 GHz. Together, those bands represent more than 200 MHz already used by Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, IoT equipment, and many other devices. The proposal could give satellite operators and device makers an alternative to securing exclusive licensed spectrum or partnering with a terrestrial carrier. It raises difficult coexistence questions. Unlicensed devices must avoid harmful interference and accept interference from other users, and a satellite beam can reach a very large area. The proceeding seeks input on power limits, equipment authorization, and technical rules for sharing the bands. Speaking of spectrum, AT&T provided a more immediate look at how new spectrum could improve its existing mobile network. The carrier selected Ericsson to supply 600 MHz dual-band radios for spectrum AT&T acquired from EchoStar. Low-band spectrum travels farther and penetrates buildings better than high-frequency spectrum, making it useful for indoor coverage and rural service. The new radios also support 8-receiver technology intended to improve uplink performance. AT&T said it was more than 60% through its wireless network modernization. In areas with upgraded Ericsson infrastructure, customers see average speeds improve by as much as 2 times. Dropped and blocked calls have declined 10%, and occurrences of slower data speeds have fallen by as much as 70%. AT&T hasn't yet announced the timing or commercial availability for the 600 MHz deployment. Another low-band spectrum transaction also reached the finish line last week. T-Mobile completed the transfer of its nationwide 800 MHz portfolio to Grain Management in exchange for $2.9 billion in cash and all of Grain's 600 MHz licenses. The FCC approved the transaction on July 1st. The 800 MHz portfolio covers the entire country with about 14 MHz of blended spectrum depth. Grain said the propagation characteristics and established device ecosystem make it suitable for private wireless networks serving electric utilities and other critical infrastructure operators, as well as enterprise communications and next-generation direct-to-device satellite service. T-Mobile, for its part, gained additional 600 MHz holdings that could be folded into a network already built around low-band coverage. We'll stay with unlicensed spectrum for a report on Wi-Fi 7 adoption. Ookla found that Wi-Fi 7 accounted for 7.2% of U.S. samples in the first quarter of 2026. Charter's spectrum represented 24.9% of those samples, making it the largest Wi-Fi 7 provider in the world by Ookla's measure. Comcast Xfinity ranked second globally, and U.S. providers made up half of the top 10 networks by sample volume. Use of the 6 GHz band grew 62% from a year earlier and reached 13.8% of total U.S. Wi-Fi sample traffic. Ookla attributed that increase to newer routers and a growing base of compatible phones and laptops. Wi-Fi 7 is still early in its adoption curve, but the next standards are not waiting. Wi-Fi 8 is expected in about 2 years, while discussions about Wi-Fi 9 are already underway. And now to artificial intelligence, where one report tried to distinguish genuine progress from a large collection of pilot projects. STL Partners' generative AI tracker counted 826 AI projects across 120 telecom providers as of May. The accompanying framework evaluated activity across 9 areas and asked questions that went beyond the number of announced use cases. It looked at whether a provider had built its own large language model, whether deployments included agentic AI, whether tools were used internally or sold to customers, and whether the company was developing sovereign AI or an AI factory. The framework then places providers on a scale from progressing to frontrunner. The point is that a long list of AI-related experiments don't automatically equal maturity. Productization, deployment at scale, governance, and measurable business value matter far more. Last week, stories also showed that AI demand continues to shape the physical network. Zayo said it plans to deploy more than 8,000 miles of new long-haul fiber to support NVIDIA AI infrastructure. The expansion will include 6 new routes through emerging AI corridors and overbuilds across 10 high-demand markets. Zayo did not provide a construction timeline. The company said the network will connect distributed AI workloads in places where long-haul capacity is limited or doesn't yet exist. That demand is coming not only from hyperscalers, but also from AI-focused cloud providers, frontier model developers, and enterprises. Zayo said it has modeled where demand is likely to appear and intends to add infrastructure ahead of it. A different kind of advanced network is taking shape in New Mexico. Two companies are using the ABQNet quantum network to develop applications beyond connecting quantum computers. Bandelier Technologies is working on secure ghost imaging, a technique designed to produce images through fog, smoke, turbid water, biological tissue, and low-light conditions. Quantum technology captures and transmits the image, and AI processing improves the result. Aliro is developing entanglement-based quantum key distribution. Traditional quantum key distribution can require trusted relay nodes, where a key briefly exists in classical form. Aliro's approach distributes entanglement end-to-end before generating the key, reducing exposure at those relay points. The applications are both still in active development, but they're showing that quantum networking research is moving toward specific operational uses. Next, two reports examined the increasingly complicated relationship between AI and cybersecurity. IBM's 2026 Cost of a Data Breach report put the global average cost of a breach at a record $4.99 million, up 12% from the previous year. The U.S. average reached $11.5 million. AI-driven attacks increased 56%, and those incidents added about $1 million to the average cost of a breach. The same technology also helped defenders. Organizations that use AI and automation extensively in security saved an average of $1.93 million. The report found that AI-related breaches had risen to 21% from 13%, and 92% of organizations that experienced one lacked proper AI access controls. The message here is that adopting AI without access controls, governance, and security coordination can really make an already expensive problem even worse. According to our own research, rural broadband providers appear to recognize both sides of that equation. Telecompetitor's 2026 Rural Broadband State of AI study, sponsored by Innovative Systems, surveyed 132 broadband providers. 27% had already deployed AI for cyber threat detection, making it the third most common use behind internal knowledge base research and targeted marketing. When we combined active use and evaluation numbers, 82% of respondents were either using or considering AI for cybersecurity and threat detection. Only network monitoring ranked higher at 85%. Among respondents in operations and technology roles, 38% identified cybersecurity as the area where AI will create the most value over the next year. Governance remains a work in progress, though. 45% of respondents said their organization has an AI usage policy. The study recommended that providers begin with a practical policy covering customer data and cybersecurity, and then revise it as experience grows. And we'll finish with two broadband acquisition stories. IQ Fiber acquired Orangeburg Fiber's network assets in South Carolina. The acquisition and related deployment represented a $35 million investment that includes upgrades to the existing network and expansion across the community. IQ Fiber plans to use an XGS PON platform capable of symmetrical speeds up to 10 gigabits per second. The Orangeburg network also strengthens the company's connection between the Columbia to Charleston corridor and its existing Lowcountry operations. In Southeast Kansas, IdeaTech agreed to acquire Wave Wireless, a locally owned provider that had served Labette County since 2000. Wave had grown from one transmitter site to 22 and provided fiber or fixed wireless service to about 3,000 locations. IdeaTech plans to introduce symmetrical residential speeds up to 8 gigabits per second and explore extending fiber into areas currently served by Wave's fixed wireless network. Wave is expected to continue day-to-day operations while the companies pursue regulatory approval, with closing anticipated this fall. And that is it for this week. Thank you so much for listening to the Broadband Exchange. As always, you can read the articles we talked about today at telecompetitor.com. Feel free to drop us a line while you're there. Thanks again for joining us, and we will see you next time.